Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
Well, okay, next, after all, this is Brendan Cornan, Mr. Matt Weber, on the board. S&P Futures up 4, and Dow Futures up 73. So it looked like we're going to run up again today. We ran up yesterday pretty steadily. We are apparently we want to go back to the just go up every day, and the Fed puts money in, and everything's okay. And you know, we'll see. Obviously, everybody would like that to happen. I'd like some manna from heaven too. Just walk out the door and grab breakfast. What do you think, Brendan?
That'd be a good thing to have.
Yeah, we.
We're almost there though with drone deliveries and
we're almost there.
Smart appliances like we were talking about on the way in, where they can monitor everything and. Anytime you're hungry, even when you're about to be hungry, they can tell you when you're going to be hungry and deliver the food.
Yeah, that's
I need that.
Yeah, we need all this stuff. So the Fed chairman met with the president, informal dinner to discuss the economy, and I'm sure the president, he's always been reserved. He didn't say anything like this. But stock market better stay up there till my reelection or you're out. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine him saying something like that. Could you?
Yeah, I can see him saying that.
Yeah. The Bill Dudley today, stop worrying about the Fed's balance sheet. Okay.
And do we also stop worrying about deficits?
We stop worrying about deficits. Larry Summers told you that last week.
Mm-hmm.
So we're good to go. And
what could possibly go wrong?
You know, I'm kind of curious as to what exactly would be the fix for all of a sudden, kind of a severe recession and a $2 trillion. I don't know what would the Fed just make. At some point, you're going to end up with, we keep saying, those of us that are more classical in our way of thinking, how's that for a term instead of being old? You think you'd reach a point where the dollars, I was talking to one of your outfit last night. An attorney, our buddy Greg, dragged me into the Club Lago. So, of course, he has to dash immediately and start talking to this attorney. And he was, he listened to the show for the first time. And he was talking about, he's the one thing I absolutely don't get. He's a real bright guy, nice guy. And, but just an example of what, in your business, when people say attorneys, there's obviously, you know, your kind. That have worked for places and do stuff with the finance things. But the guys who are out, I'll say, schlepping the street, mm-hmm. Going from courthouse to courthouse, helping people with criminal stuff and with this kind of stuff, divorce stuff. What a horrible job. I mean, in terms of, it's not, I think in some ways it can be very rewarding, but it always seems like the people that these guys want to help the most are the people less likely to pay. I mean, you're always going up against people that are making $750 an hour, and you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just if ever you want to hear what's wrong with the justice system, all you do is talk to these guys for a while.
Oh no, I think that's true. You know, I decided very early on in law school that I did not want to be a litigator because of a Dalmatian, of all things. A friend of mine who was a lawyer a few years older than I was had graduated law school, and I said, you know, how can I find out about what it means to be a lawyer? And he said, here, go to this court. And so I went to the courtroom, and it happened to be a dog bite case. And everything was in favor of the guy who got bit. And the judge was up. There was a no jury trial. It was just the judge on the bench for a bench trial. And
did the dog have a lawyer?
The dog did not have a lawyer, but the owner did.
Oh.
And finally, after, you know, from my perspective, it just is a layperson sitting in the in the audience, I thought this is a slam dunk in favor of the guy who got bit. And judge looks over his glasses and goes, "What kind of a dog was this?" And the attorney says, "Your Honor, it was a Dalmatian." And the judge leans back in his chair and he says, "Dalmatian. I had a Dalmatian when I was a little kid. Those are really nice dogs." Judgment for the defendant.
There you go.
And all because it was a Dalmatian. You know, you know that if it was a pit bull or a Rottweiler or something like that, it would have gone the other way. And I decided I don't want to be subject to the vagaries of a court like that.
You know,
or
what,
a jury.
You know what Dalmatians were bred to do?
Put out fires?
No, not Weber.
What were they supposed to do?
What was their, most dogs were bred for a specific purpose. I mean, you would, I don't know about your guy.
Was it hunting or was?
They were on essentially, you know, they sit on the fireman's car, on the fireman's truck. They did that. They were on either like beer delivery trucks or fire trucks back before you had cars. They would race ahead of the horse-drawn thing because they're real fast. And they would clear the area of like highwaymen and stuff that were there to rob it. They'd bark and stuff if there were people up the way.
I didn't know that.
They're very fast, and they weren't bred to like fight the guys or anything or go after them like a dobe might. They were bred to just run up there and essentially make sure the highway was clear.
And if they barked, would it warn the people on the wagon so that they'd be prepared to fight if the dogs couldn't get away?
Right.
Interesting.
It was a. They were to notify people about highwaymen, essentially.
How did you learn that?
Once in a while, whenever I was looking for dogs, I got this thing about breeds, and once you start reading about them, if you go to the place by Audrey's, there's a pet no kill shelter, 3 generations now people have been running it, and whenever there's a dog, they'll say characteristics of the breed and where it had come from. And they had a Dalmatian there one day. So I kicked on characteristics of the breed, and there it was. Now, you know, like a little Westie. So those little guys, they're designed to go and grab vermin. They will go after every little mouse, everything. You know, they got the kind of the weirdo looking tails?
Yeah.
You know what the tail is actually designed to do?
No.
It's strong enough that if they get stuck in a hole, you can pull them out by their tail. Where you could never pull like another dog out by its tail. You know, but those guys, the tail is actually strong enough where you can yank it because they stick their nose and everything and get caught. How weird is that? Anyway, you do a lot of stuff with dog breeding. People, you know, did it years ago.
This is a very educational program.
Well, you know, I mean, it's, you know, the funny part, Brennan, every class I ever took, and you know how people say all they did was learn stuff that they never used?
Mm-hmm.
If you remembered what you, and I have a interesting, I have no memory for names, but I can remember all this stuff for some reason. But Dr. Jay and I were so good together on the air, not that anybody else here isn't, but he remembers all the names and I remember all the substance. And between the two of us, wasn't that right, Maddie? Jen would remember every name.
That's true, yeah.
And I would remember, was that the article about something? Yeah, you know, one written by, I don't know who was written by Jen, but I remember it was in the article. He goes, "How do you remember it was in the article?" I said, "How do you remember the name?" These guys, you know, some days they're somewhat happy and some days they were in Markham, they were in Rolling Meadows, they were in Winnetka or someplace, and every one of them was a continuance, and the other people didn't show, and man, it's schlepping around. You know?
Well, a lot of lawyers have a practice like that where it is small cases, and they've got to really hustle both to find business and then to, you're right, I mean, when they're in all the various circuit courts around town, like out in Bridgeview, and then Maywood, and they're jockeying their times and their dates. It's very stressful, and you're right. Many of the people that they represent are unable to pay them a lot of money, even for the quality of work that they do to get them off. I mean, you might think, you know, what's it worth to get you out of a DUI? What's it worth to get you out of, even if it's specious charges? You know, what is it worth to you? And then can you pay it? Are those guys really getting what they're worth?
Well, you know, but you read somebody. I'll answer the original reason why I started this conversation. But one of the guys had this case in some of these suburbs and some of these people. God, Brandon, can't we use our heads a little bit? I guess there was a lady who's had some issues. She's in her 30s, so she's not a kid. had some issues with, who knows what, never really could hold a job, never really, you know, who knows if there's some issue there or whatever. Well, there's this house that was, went on sale, and evidently, so she wanders in the back door and starts looking around the place, even though people still live there. Didn't take anything, didn't do anything, wandered in. And all of a sudden she wanders out. The people notice that somebody had been there, and they see somebody walking away. They call 911. They arrest her. She's just a little off. She didn't take anything. Felony breaking and entering or something.
Mm-hmm.
Not like miscellaneous, you know, whatever. And now they're after her for, like, God knows what. I mean, she didn't take anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's, you know, maybe deserves, you know, 30 days somewhere to check her out, but for God's sake, a felony? I mean, what are we doing? I mean, in the South Side, every family, every block had somebody who wasn't quite right, and if they wandered in your backyard, you didn't call the police on them?
Yes. Well, yeah, I don't know if it was because it was an area where she wasn't very familiar and they didn't know her.
Maybe, yeah.
And they just didn't know how dangerous she was or wasn't.
But, I mean, there was no breaking and entering,
mm-hmm.
No bag. She didn't take it. It wasn't like she brought, you know, like some huge bag to take people's silver or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's zero forgiveness in a lot of these areas.
Well, that's true.
One guy has a $35 shoplifting thing from Mariano's, and they won't let it drop.
Mm-hmm.
$35. The guy, you know, I mean, what are we doing here?
Well, and then on the other end of the spectrum, there are some people who get away with stealing a lot more, causing a lot more mayhem,
right,
and never get charged.
And we have this incredible court of public opinion regarding anything anybody may have said or done anywhere in their life, not that it was ever right.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we've got on the other end of the scale, guys at the top end of the spectrum doing whatever they damn well please and calling everybody whatever they want.
Yep.
Now, allegedly, the president tonight is going to be very conciliatory, which is fine. Well, is he going to insult everybody first and then be conciliatory?
That would be kind of his M.O. so far.
So what's he going to say something nice about Nancy Pelosi after yesterday saying she's a, what was it, she's a very bad person and very bad for the country or something?
Mm-hmm.
Now, she's supposed to forget that if he's nice to her tonight?
Yes.
I don't see how that... Anyway, the question the guy asked was, you were talking about dollar fluctuations. He goes, I have no idea what that means. What is that? What happens there? How does that affect me? And I said, well, as I usually mention, you're a guy like me, like you, like Maddie, you're sitting in the middle of a country that... You're thousands of miles from the water, much less some other country, except for Canada, and it doesn't affect you really at all. But it sort of does. If the dollar were to drop 10%, somewhere along the line, you might not even notice it. But the stuff you buy that's imported might go up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If you drink Heinekens or whatever. Now, will the fact that the Heinekens and the other beer has gone up some, will that cause the people that are making the beer here to sneak theirs up 5%? I mean. It probably is happening. You probably wouldn't notice it unless you went overseas. The rest of the world, well, not so much as it was, but when I went to Europe in the early 90s before the Eurodollar, is the you had every it seemed like every time you went somewhere you were changing currency.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You were very aware, you know, that yesterday was this amount of you know, marks to the dollar, and the next day it was the other way. So you lost money on the transaction in like one day.
Mm-hmm.
But here, I said, really, in the Midwest, you don't, unless you watch the news, unless you're in the stock market, unless you, like, have gold or something where gold could actually go down in terms of dollars but go up in terms of yen. I said, you really don't. He's like, how does that happen? I go, well, because dollar and yen might be going different directions. So everything is valued in relation to something else, but you don't get to hold the third thing even.
Mm-hmm.
There's always more than one thing happening. And, you know, that's, I hope people who listen to the show maybe get a little sense of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because because why would you focus on that if you live here?
Well, you know, you're all wrapped up in what your daily affairs are.
Yeah, you never have money in your pocket other than a dollar. Although now maybe you don't want money in your pocket and stuff. And you know, I don't see how we're shoving money out of the system. I mean, people are making all these rules. You know, even. I really was one thing I liked about Trump getting in is he was going to do something with these regulations. I would go back. I would take back all the stuff on a mortgage close now.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how they used to tell you bring a few $100 in case there's something wrong. You'd always just pay cash for the last, you know, if something was wrong.
Right. Just to
now you can't do that. It's got to get wired in.
Mm-hmm.
You can't bring a check. You can't bring a certified check. I mean, what is wrong? I mean, these people make these rules. Why?
There's something that I've said on the show before that, you know, bad facts make bad laws. These are an overreaction to things that happened a few years ago. You know, with the mortgage crisis, it's much harder to get a loan right now. The economic crisis makes it much harder to do business because it's an overreaction to what happened then. Now, you could argue that some of these things, if they had been in place in 2006, 2005, then we wouldn't have had the economic crisis that
we had. You mean bringing a check to a mortgage?
No, I'm not equating those two to it. But some of the regulations and some of the desires right now are meant to as an overreaction to what happened for the financial crisis. Or usually laws are made because of something that happened, and somebody got away with something. It made a big deal, and now you're trying to fix that particular thing. But there are always unintended consequences, because when you try to fix that particular thing, something else will pop up that gives you another loophole, another out of doing the same or similar behavior without getting punished. And so then there's an overreaction to take care of that thing. A lot of laws are passed to correct bad performance in the past. They're not future-looking.
These people that do this, and it's not like they're bad. They just don't have any... I mean, because we get, obviously, with the PTI Securities, we have all kinds of people that watch us. Who is it? Dr. Leonard McCoy, I don't know if you were a Star Trek guy.
Oh, yeah.
Bones, one of his greatest lines, the bureaucratic mind has been a constant through the ages.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these people, you can just see where this is going, Brennan. It's okay, If you're gonna send somebody an email, a letter, obviously you always keep a copy of a letter, right? If you send it to a client.
Yep.
Send them an email. Well, now you not only have to keep the copy of the email, you have to have an email server, which of course there's only like one, so you wonder what the kickback is there, that keeps all these emails even if we decide to delete them. So mm-hmm. you have to go use that server.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's, if you can't be on any sort of a, that's why I don't text. I mean, I text to people, but I don't. That's why you really shouldn't text to a client, and I'm very careful about that, because all this stuff. Somebody needs a way to gather them up, so your flunky auditor can look at them.
Well, you got to look at them. You know, in the legal world, I'm told by a lot of my litigator friends that they cannot communicate with a client via text.
Right.
They have to use email.
Right.
They must use email because. If they're ever challenged, their malpractice insurance will not look at a text as proper communication.
They will if you have a way to gather it up.
I don't think so. What I've been told is that they can't use text because maybe there are some exemptions to that told that that's why the lawyers say, don't text me.
See if it's the same as ours, okay, I could tweet out all I wanted. If we had procedures in place where every time that I'd put a tweet out, that there's somebody in PTI who is the tweet master and would gather up everyone and make sure we had it. If you have procedures in place to gather all this stuff up, you can do that. And if I had somebody... Essentially, if we had a procedure in place where every text I sent out was on a specific PTI phone or something like that, I could do it. So your lawyer, by saying he can't, the firm is telling him he can't because they don't want to keep track of it.
Okay, that I understand that.
Does it
have to be on both sides? Like if you were to text me, do I have to have a way to retrieve it or just you?
It's sort of a gray area. The thing of it is, if I text you, it could be considered. I mean, it's probably not because these people haven't gone to this extreme craziness yet. I mean, in theory, every time I say something to somebody, it could be soliciting for client. But
mm-hmm.
in reality, you know, as long as you don't do your clients, you know, in terms of. You end up doing it. I mean, not so much where you might have somebody call up and say, "Hey, buy me 500 shares of IBM." and you know, I'll be driving. Just text me my fill,
mm-hmm.
And I will. You know, once in a great while, you'll text back. You know, you're done or something,
mm-hmm.
And you know, which is to me only common sense. I mean, it's kind of a request, but I'm not soliciting by that. I'm not doing anything. I'm not trying to get you to do a trade or anything like that. You're the one who called me, you know, because what we're going with this, Brent, is if you take it to your next degree. I mean, these guys really don't want you talking to anybody because they don't know what you're saying.
Well, they want you to talk that's not verifiable. They want to be able to go back and gotcha or clear you.
I mean, we're a year away.
It works both ways.
But I'm saying you think that it's not it's not, well, legal or whatever that for me to text. I'm going to say that if these, and I'll use the term idiots, the bureaucrats go any further. You and I will not be able to have a conversation over a drink, and I will not be able to call you. I will only be able to email you or text you because they want everything we said back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that to me is unconscionable, and yet we're heading right that direction.
Well, we may be, but
I can't talk to you unless I tape it.
But that just means that the millennials and the teens of today are way ahead of us because
they're not way texting, ahead.
They're texting all the time.
They're not way ahead, but they're too dumb to realize that if you take people's freedom away from them, you don't know where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And because why should I not be able to email you without a record of it, and yet I can call you up?
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, in a bureaucratic mind, that's just something I can't have happen.
Yeah, there is something we said about the bureaucratic mind and how it doesn't work.
Well, I mean that's the way. I mean, we're almost at a point where any kind of the dating relationship or any let's just say the mating game, we're at a point where we better tape that. You mm-hmm. said what? You said this? You said that? I didn't mean for that to happen. Well, what do you mean? I mean, we're almost at a point where it's not going to be a world that I'm really happy with.
Well. I think it's out in California where some of the colleges have this new rule book that you're supposed to follow if you're dating, where you have to, in order to avoid any kind of charge of allegation of sexual assault, that you have to have consent of both parties every step along the way. So, you know, Mary, may I hold your hand? Yes, you may hold my hand. And if I don't get her permission, then I can't hold her hand. You know, what happens to the spontaneity or even flirting?
Like ladies aren't very happy if they don't want you to. They're very, very, very capable of pulling her hand away.
Yeah. Or what happens if Mary decides to say, "Let me hold your hand," or just reaches out for your hand?
Well, the new, female dominated world appears to be in their mind that sex is something a male does to a female. And I'm not so sure in my experience that. It's, you know, whatever. It's something two people do, I mm-hmm. think. I mean, I don't, you know, whatever. But we've got all this kind of weird stuff where, you don't recognize the world we're in sometimes. And everybody knows there's always been boors all along the way, and people have caught things wrong or right. But to try and identify bad behavior, it's hard enough in the law, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I mean, yes.
I mean, sure enough, it's sure hard enough in politics. Anyway, we have the S&P futures now up 5. Market is rallying pretty good. The last few days, I mean, a lot of stocks that have been the last few days, we rallied back pretty much the broad market. But last few days, a lot of individual stocks that were down last quarter really come back some. So if you hung in there with some of your dogs, I think you've done halfway decent. The S&P futures up 18.75. Come back, let Mr. Joel and Cannon talk a little bit about Michigan basketball and a little bit about the market.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Brendan Cronin in here. We have Mr. Joel and Cannon on the board. S&P Futures up 550. So, we're doing all full traffic and weather here. Yeah, my timing is off here. What I was going to insult Joel with, and here we are, we got traffic, weather, sports. I was going to try and do a thing about I was President Trump. Anyway, Dow futures up 90, NASDAQ futures up 23, got oil down 15 cents, 10-year yield
up a whole 1/100th of a point up to 2.73. It was down to 2.6 something, so it is creeping up a little, although I don't think anybody's going to pay any attention until it gets to 3. Over in Europe, we got the DAX up 123. That's a full 1%. FTSE up 102, 1.4%. CAC around up 50. That's 1%. So we're the market going up here is really starting to affect the rest of the world a little bit. Nikkei, however, down 39.1%. Shanghai was closed yesterday. It's up 1.3%. Actually, I'm going to ask Joe. Are they closing today? It's the same number as yesterday. Hang Seng up 59. That's 0.2%. Again, oil is down 15 cents now. Brent down 22. So it's kind of locked in at this 54.40 range, which is way better than it was. We got gold, as the rest of the world decides that we're not as viciously in trouble as we were 2 weeks ago. Gold has been slipping back down. Silver 1,300, 1,317. Silver down 5 cents, 1,583. Many we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a very good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Our one area of concern is up north, the Edens outbound, just before Pratt Avenue. We have a crash blocking the right lane. The road was down to one lane, and now it's just the right lane. So traffic is navigating around that crash on the Edens heading toward the North Shore. But it's still there, and it's still a bit of a slowdown, so keep that in mind. Kennedy is looking okay in both directions. Same with the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Off to good starts on the Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. Only other area of concern is up near the airport, I-90 eastbound, just before Busty Road, we had an earlier crash. That crash has been clear, so we're looking good out there. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, we cool off significantly compared to what we've been the last 3 days, but nothing like last week. This week is much more like normal February temperatures. A lot of upper 20s, low 30s. Today will be overcast. Could have a brief snow-rain mix. We'll reach a high of 32. Wind chills in the upper teens. Right now, it is overcast and 28 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today and a high of 63. Right now, it's partly cloudy and 51. In sports, Bulls were off last night. Chris Dunn is day-to-day with a lower leg injury.
So are we.
Yes. Suns lost to the Rockets, 118-110. In hockey, Blackhawks were off. Coyotes lost to the Stars, 5-4. And in college hoops, Northwestern continues to have a down year. They lost at home to previously winless Penn State, 59-52.
So, I just want to say from this call-out hall that this guy Joel is a bleep. And how anybody could possibly have voted for him, I have no idea. He's bad for America. Really bad. I mean, really, just a really bad person. But I will just say, starting today, my administration is going to work with Joel and crawl across the aisle, and they're going to make this all better. Who's that sound like?
So, Chief, you spend time figuring out how to aggravate me? Is that what you do in your spare time before the show starts?
No, he said you're a good guy. Yeah, it was right at the end.
We're going to work for you. I'm saying before you say you're going to work with somebody, you got to insult the hell out of them. Whose style is that?
Selective hearing. You got to pick what you want to hear.
Yeah.
No comment. Let's talk sports. Let's talk the market.
Yes.
I'm not good at talking politics.
Well, what does the song say? A man, he hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest? Paul Simon.
That's right.
Who said
Paul
that?
Simon.
Paul Simon. Yeah, Paul Simon.
Paul Simon.
Okay. How you guys doing this morning?
We're doing good. We're doing really. I mean, we're not 20 below zero, so everything past that is good.
No. No code here for me on Sunday. They got over 50 degrees, but who knows? It's still early, not much snow. A lot of cold days. We never had cold days when we were in school. We had snow days, right? And now it's too cold to go to school, man. I wish I would have participated in a few of those.
Well, I will say this, that we never had a cold day. We had a couple of snow days in the 67 fiasco when the buses were just abandoned on the street. But I can't ever remember a day where it, because there hadn't been one. I remember days where it got to -1 or -2. I never saw a day that it only got to -13 with a wind. I mean, it was never one that cold.
It was
pretty bad.
But how about that Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Huh?
How about it?
GOAT. I wish I could have predicted it. But Brady does it again, the GOAT. I saw an interesting statistic, not real proud of it, but since Brady left the Michigan, he has won 6 Super Bowls, and Michigan's won a grand total of 4 bowl games. not good.
Yeah, Michigan.
Maybe they could bring him back.
Yeah, you think he
can have any eligibility left?
Well, they'd like to bring back their quarterbacks. Maybe they'll dump Harbaugh and bring him back.
No, I think he's probably going to play about another 7-8 years.
Well, he said he wants to play at least 45, which is another 4 years.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Or do you think it's just the quality of the NFL going down? I mean,
I don't know if it is.
13-3 Super Bowl. I mean, what happened to this being a super offensive league, and now all of a sudden the defense? I don't know. Maybe old Matt Patricia of the Lions, by focusing on the defense here, maybe he is going in the right direction when you see a 13-3 Super Bowl.
Well, it's interesting about Brady that I've read that most people think this is the best offensive line the Patriots have ever had. Mm-hmm. So they spent a lot of effort to make sure they protected him this year. And they did, you know, which is a good thing. You're supposed to protect your quarterback, obviously. But that they still have that ability with the slot receiver, no matter who he is, to break down other people's zones. I mean, and they all read together, you know, the pattern. And I remember that when we were in, we played in this really high-end touch league, and I was the offensive guy, and I know probably 1/100th of an offensive coordinator in the
fullback, Chief? Were you the fullback?
No, I was the second-string quarterback, and I was the offensive kind of coordinator, dude.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But it's very complicated, but it's also very simple. It's getting people where they aren't. It's like an option position. Every option position has something bad that can happen. There's always a hole in it.
Yep.
And then the trick is when you go up to the line, if you have people that can read the same playbook, meaning the quarterback and the receivers, every formation, if every receiver really has almost like two routes, in the minute you see what's going on and you send somebody in motion, which should let you know whether or not it's a man or a zone, then everybody should essentially select their route on the line, and the quarterback should select his receiver. It's not like college ball where there's one guy in the pattern and he's running down the field and you're going to throw to him if the whole stands come out and surround the guy. I mean, it's not like college at all in that regard. I mean, most colleges have one receiver that's in the pattern. Some have two. The really high-end ones have three. I mean, Purdue was always a place that there was a reason why your quarterbacks came out of Purdue and from what was the place in BYU. Because those quarterbacks demanded their...
Right in those formations, yep. Agree with you. I mean, my criticism of Brady when he was going into the NFL, and I'll never live this down, I told him, buddy, he was too slow in the pocket. I thought that he, his feet were too slow, that they'd eat him up in the NFL, but boy, oh boy, has he ever worked on that? It's like he knows where the ball's going. I mean, two-step, drop, boom, and now he knows where his backup is, but... All those patterns are timing. I mean, how many times you see Edelman, he just knows he's going to do 3-4 steps, cut right, and he's going to get a ball right in his gut. So it's all timing, and it's great to see. I was a Drew Henson fan until George Steinbrenner stole him away to put him in the Yankees, but that's a story for another time.
I'm sure
we don't have time to go over that
one. Well, again, I'm not a Mr. Coach or anything, but if you're going to play a Tampa cover two, You need a guy like Brian Urlacher that can get back in the coverage pattern.
Yeah. Oh, it's cut. Yep. Yeah.
And if you don't, you've got that big hole in the middle of the field. If your linebacker can't go back there and get it, now you can cover a little bit of that with a nickel or a dime play where you have an extra defensive back. But by and large, if your safeties go deep, your hole's right there in the middle. Now, if you have somebody as fast as Urlacher, who essentially played safety, can get back in there, then you can cover that hole. If you don't, or if you have a play action. And the guy bites up the middle. I mean, you and I, there's not a soul there within 10 yards. Right over to center, 10 yards downfield. And Edelman is a master.
Well, that's what you saw on Sunday.
Yeah, he's finding that hole. Because it's all about bringing people in, bringing people back. That's why if you watch from the sidelines, on the first down, especially if you're the Bears, not anymore. If you're the Bears, you watch the linebackers walk up two steps. So there's essentially eight guys there. The Bears will run against eight guys. And all of a sudden now it's 2nd and 9. Then you see the linebackers all back up 3 feet. And you go, how the hell are you going to pass against that? And then they do. Because they were idiots for like 20 years. But now they've got, a better coach. And I mean, the Patriots will run on 3rd and 15 if they got everybody way back, right?
You know, it's amazing. Didn't they run the first or six or seven plays of the game? I mean, I was counting them.
They did.
You know, great balance. Everyone's looking for the pass. I'll have to go back and take a look. But Josh McDaniel with the first 5-6 running plays caught the Rams off balance. And I mean, not only being a big Michigan and, you know, Patriot fan, I was just enough of the, you know, the young coach and the young stud and, so it's good. It takes a while. But, Chief, that's it. That's all I got for you today.
What about the market? Are we going to keep going up?
Go blue.
Are we going to keep going up, the market?
Of course, Chief. Come on. No matter what, bad earnings, buy a stock. Good earnings, buy a stock. It's been, the street's been kind, and I just don't see any resistance in the S&Ps here for another 40, 50 handles. I don't know what. Trump tweet could change that, but everything's good going north.
Paul came out and said that dinner basically was no good, and he's going back, and everything he told Trump, that'd do it.
Exactly. All right, have a good one, guys.
SP Futures up 6. We'll be right back. Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Can't buy me love. Love.
Well, and we'll pay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Out. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Brendan Cronin here in the studio. We have Mr. Kenny Pulcheri. S&P Futures up 6. Looks like the rally to end all rallies, Kenny.
No, I don't think the rally's over yet. Actually, look at what happened yesterday. The market surged up and through intermediate trend line resistance, which I was actually very surprised at. I figured it was going to struggle with that at least once or twice. But, you know, the eco data and kind of the sense that earnings are okay forced that the S&P right up and through. And so now it's just about to kiss long-term resistance, which is going to be really interesting because I suspect this one we will kiss and fail just because it's long-term resistance and it's probably a little bit more difficult to getting through it. Although, should you get any indication tonight from the State of the Union address that, you know, progress is being made with China and that, you know, maybe a March 1 deal is in the works, I think you'll see the market just explode right up and through and there will be no holding it back, at least on its initial reaction.
How many times are we going to bring that card out of the deck?
Well, listen, you know, you put it in the deck, you take it out of the deck. You put it in, you take it out. The market responds in kind, right? One day the talks are great, the market rallies. The next day, you know, they talk about we got miles and miles to go and the market sinks. And so it's going to be that way until we get clarity one way or the other. Either we're going or we're not. And at that point, then the market's going to react. My sense is, though, that we're closer to going. My sense is that we're closer to a deal than not. My only fear is, are they going to push that, are they going to, you know, that self-imposed March 1 date is self-imposed, right? So are they going to push it a little bit? Are they going to tweak it? Or is that going to be a hardline failure? If we don't do it by then, he's going to just hit them with another 15% on top of the 10% tariffs already. And I think that's kind of my concern. Although the market, as of like yesterday, market does not seem to be concerned. Look at the move it's had, not only yesterday, but in the last, you know, really for the last month, ever since the start of the new year, the market's kind of discounted a lot of that fear. Although I still think it's out there, and I think it's just simmering in the back burner. So, and if it rears its ugly head, then I think the market, you know, kind of reacts violently as a result. But right now, it doesn't. Market to me feels like that's not the case.
Well, we had for lack of a better term, a decade where we worried zero about any long term problems being deficits, anything like that. And we just focused on money coming out of the Fed, going into the market, it going up, and people like Summers telling you don't worry about your deficits. Now Bill Dudley, stop worrying about the balance sheet. You're being told by people that are high-profile people that everything's fine. And yet, you know, I to me, it seems like there comes a debt limit. And I don't, you know, whatever. I mean, now we've got the Fed totally behind this guy going to dinner at the White House and the whole bit, and I mean they're not going to do anything. You know, the market will be way up by the time this guy runs for office again, I think. And yet, at some point, I mean obviously when the markets have gone down in the past, you just reach a point where they go down, and then you don't want to reach that point where the Fed can't stop it. And the more
I agree.
You know, but I don't think we're there yet, Kenny. I mean the question is how far do we have to get? What's the world going to look like when that happens? I mean,
right.
You know, I don't.
Nobody knows that, right? That's kind of the big question mark that's out there and has been out there, by the way, since really day one. When they first announced QE1, you know, back in 2009, okay, it was all that excitement around how the Fed saved it, blah, blah, blah. But the conversation then started right away about what did this really mean and what is QE1, and as people tried to understand what it was, and then you went to QE2 and QE3 and then QE infinity, and, you know, it went on for decades. And so now trying to work ourselves out of that, you're right, no one really understands what it's going to feel like or be like. And I think that was evident, you know, back in October when, you know, once again, the process of normalizing and rolling off of the balance sheet took center stage and the market didn't like what it heard, or the algos or the people, the investors, whatever, didn't like what they heard because, they didn't want the Kool-Aid to get taken away. But at some point, you're going to have to do it. And what's it going to look like? I guess we're about to find out, right?
Well, but is the market totally dependent on outside money from the Fed? I mean, if it is, I mean, I hope it isn't.
Well, I think it was totally dependent for a long time. I think it's becoming less so now. That's why I'd like to see the market not have such violent reactions every time Jay Powell or someone from the Fed opens their mouth. But I think as long as the market reacts violently every time somebody opens their mouth, then yes, it kind of dictates that the market is still, you know, that the Fed is the pacifier, right? That the market still, the market is still expecting it. But at some point, it can't be like that.
What
right?
Did you happen to listen to? I know you're not, Cassie, you're not in the studio. Well, you are sometimes. I get to see your smiling face. the guy Jim Grant was on last week, yeah. And he's, you know, well, he's got the bow tie going. He's got the, you know, let's say he says all the rotten things about the economy like I do, but I don't think he has as much of a sense of humor. But anyway, just saying. But he was talking about, and this is something I never picked up on, that he thinks the Fed is technically insolvent. They've lost $600 billion on mortgages. Which actually, by the way, if they paid 65, 70 cents on the dollar, which they would have paid, I think they paid 100%. If they paid 100%, it's exactly my number, Kenny. That's how much they lost. And I see from the end here, I don't know if you know people who are in the real estate business, try and get a foreclosure out of a bank.
Yeah.
And how these banks, who I think are certain, well, a quarter of all mortgages got to be at the Fed now, darn near, or 20%, or probably was more for a while. The amount that these banks drag this out and get the legal fees and get the stuff, you know, they're charging these guys all this stuff. I mean, they can't wait to screw the Fed. Now, it wouldn't surprise me that they haven't lost an average of a third on every mortgage they have. I mean, the first ones that were paid off early, paid off 100%, those are probably long gone. The ones that are left are the ones that are dogs. Now, if that's true, that's a number that I never even dreamed of. As much as I can try and be a grumpus about this. I mean, if he's at all right, Kenny, where do you come up with $600 billion? God's sake.
Yeah, no, well, I hear you. I didn't see that conversation with Jim Grant. I'd actually like to go back and watch that so I could understand what he was saying. But if that's the case, if what he's saying is true, then yeah, that is more of a problem than I think they've let on. I was not under the impression, that's interesting to me, and I want to go back and watch it, because I was not under the impression that the Fed was losing that kind of money at all. In fact, I was under the impression that you know, they held these long enough, they were able to roll these off, and they were selling that portfolio. Whatever was expiring, right? That was just rolling off. But then the other ones that they were selling, and that they had done pretty well on the ones that they were selling. So it more than made up for their generosity over the decade. Now, if that's a misconception, then I'd like to go back and watch Jim
Grant. The only thing I know is that we had interview. On two or three occasions, and I'm not going to say five, but I actually heard two or three occasions when Janet Yellen was in front of doing a Humphrey Hawkins testimony, a representative asked her, by the way, what did you pay for these mortgages? My people want to know. Did you pay 100 cents on the buck? And she would never answer the question. She dodged it, and she would say, well, we have people that studied them, and we paid the appropriate price. She never once said that, no, we paid... We knew they weren't worth 100, so we paid 65, and the banks jumped at it. She never once said that. So I'm assuming that they overpaid to essentially placate the people in the room, which are the banks. And if they did pay 100 cents, I'm going to guess you and I would probably come up with I'll bet they're worth two-thirds of that. I mean, that was my number starting out. I mean,
I would agree. I would agree that that's probably what they were worth. I'd be shocked if, in fact, the Fed paid 100 cents on the dollar when anyone else could have said they're not worth 100 cents on the dollar. Why are you paying 100 cents on the dollar?
But they historically have done that. They've given people that kind of stuff for resolution trust. I mean, they'll do anything to save the people they want to.
Right.
You just wonder in the politics here, Kenny, can these kinds of massive decisions, can we just grow to the point where they keep her, you know, it's like, you know, the mortgage 40 years ago. It's $5 a month. Who cares? I mean, it seems like it's getting harder and harder, and the screw-ups are getting bigger and bigger. We don't just walk over them like we used to be able to.
Right.
I don't know. It's a downer Tuesday when the market goes straight up. And then, by the same token, I can't get over how much money my people have made in the last 3 weeks.
I mean, they're going to make more today because the market's looking higher again today. And like I said, I think the market, it feels like it wants to go right to 27.41, which is the long-term resistance. It just feels like it wants to go there. And I suspect it's going to, but then I suspect it's going to fail. At least today, it's going to fail because there's a lot going on, right? The State of the Union speech tonight, tomorrow there's going to be more Jay Powell comments, but the comments tomorrow that Jay Powell is going to make is to some educator group. It's not necessarily to, you know, it's not to Congress, it's not to an industry organization, but you can expect, I suppose, that the media and everyone's going to be paying very close attention to what he says at that educated group to see if there's any difference between what he said last week and what he says tomorrow now, right? But I think until you get through that, tonight's speech and tomorrow's Fed comments, you know, the market might just tease with it but be held in check.
What do you suppose happens if Jay Powell comes out and says, it's been explained to me and I understand now that 1% of the people own 90% of the market. They also run the government, and my job is to make sure the market stays up.
God, can you?
Can you? But you know what?
Is that essentially what he said last week?
Yeah,
so he changed his mind and said, you know, the data now is indicating that we should slow down.
Yeah.
Look, on last week he says the data is indicating we should slow down, and then yesterday and Friday and yesterday, the macro data actually was fairly strong. And so therefore there's a disconnect between, well, last week you said it was slowing down. Now the data continues to be strong, and so where are we, right? Who's really telling the truth here?
I think depending on what part of the data you look at, you get different
right.
stories. But, Kenny, you have a good week, buddy, and we'll talk to you again next week, and hopefully I'll see you gesturing away on TV.
Goodbye.
All right, buddy. Take care. S&P futures up 550, Dow futures up 86, NASDAQ futures up 20. We'll have Mr. Carl Denninger after the break.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTIsecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTIsecurities.com. That's john@PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Welcome to Pay Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Brennan Cornan is in the studio. We have Matt Weber on the board. And we have Mr. Carl Dennerger calling in, I'm assuming, from Florida, unless he's skiing somewhere. S&P Futures up 575, Dow up 91. NASDAQ a little bit behind that at 23, but positive again today. We've been positive for a while. And an awful lot of people who had a bad last quarter are seeing an awful lot of that money coming back. And maybe you're getting a chance to do something you should have done before, or maybe you just let it ride. Depends on the person. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You're just the man I want to see. I know we have a lot of stuff to talk about with the labor numbers and everything, but one of these days, and we kind of won't do it today, but I suspect as I search the world for an expert, ask an expert, as we used to say here in Chicago, I'm dying to find out exactly where all the losses went in some of this. In the mortgage thing, why I have a phobia for this, I don't know. Because mainly because I'm the only person that, except for you, who read up a lot on resolution trust. But I'm somehow or another, Jim Grant was on. You know who he is, the guy with the bow tie. I always really like listening.
Oh yeah.
But he came out and said something about. I mean, you and I were kind of emailing back and forth that the Fed's technically broke. They're $600 billion down on these mortgages or something.
Right. Well, that's and see, that's kind of how this sort of game works. I mean, the entire point of the Fed buying those securities was to prevent the insolvency of the institutions that were holding them from becoming evident because they were broke. Okay. So, you know, I mean, if you buy something that is worth much less, then you're going to take the loss, right? I mean, that's just how that works. Especially if you pay par for something that's worth 70 cents, well, you lose 30 cents. I mean,
it's funny you should mention that, because if you think they were worth 70 cents, that's exactly the number, $600 billion. So, I mean, you and I thought that they were worth 65, 70 cents all along the way, if they did pay 100 cents. But here's what I don't get, Carl. And again, we want to talk more about the labor stuff today, but, somewhere in this mess, and Brendan and I were just talking about it, and Brendan, Mr. Attorney here, always talks me down. I don't know of a soul who put 10% down on a place, and a lot of people did, or 15%, and the banks were over them like white on rice to make sure they had this mortgage interest. Now, some of those people, you know, their houses went down through no fault of anybody's, well, except they were too high to start with, but so they go down, person needs a job, you know, gets a job in another town, they have to leave. They walk on the mortgage. I don't know of any one of those banks that got a check for, you know, the other 5 or 10 or 15% of the 20% down from the mortgage insurance people. They just abdicate. Now, Fannie and Freddie allegedly guaranteed it. Okay, now, they were bailed out by the government. And now the feds, how many people are going to take this loss on this? And the banks must have lost something, even though they got, you know, now they're probably making it all back with servicing the stuff and charging the Fed a fortune. But how could the mortgage interest people never pay, it appears. I mean, the mortgage insurance people, even though people paid them. I don't know where the hell they all disappeared to. Fannie and Freddie took this big hit. Now the Fed's taking this big. Didn't any of this ever wash? I mean, if Fannie and Freddie are taking the hit on this mortgage that they guaranteed, why did the Fed pay 60 cents on the buck? Shouldn't Fannie and Freddie made up the difference? I mean, I'm missing this whole thing here. Does anybody, I suspect you do, how does this all connect?
Well, the way it connects is that all the people that were playing this game had no reserves. And so you have people that are essentially playing with infinite leverage, and very tiny losses will bankrupt you in that kind of a world, because if I've only got to put 2% of, you know, whatever I have out in capital on the table, then a 2% loss means I have nothing, and a 5% loss means I'm so far underwater that I can't use a dive gear to get out of that one. And that's essentially what was going on. You know, if you remember, there was a great deal during the crash. MBI and the other mortgage insurers were all, you know, their stock prices were in the tank. They were selling for pennies. And everybody was saying, hey, these guys are bankrupt. And they were, but for the fact that these bonds got bought at above their market price. And so there's a couple of kind of odd things that happen with mortgages, though. Your mortgage rate is generally set pretty much in lockstep with the 10-year treasury, even though most people take 30-year mortgages. And that's because almost nobody actually stays in the house and pays the entire 30 years. The average tenor is somewhere between 7 to 10 years on mortgage bonds. So they prepay out for one reason or another, either because you sell the house or you refi, or something goes wrong and you default somewhere within those first, you know, 6-7 years, and you get foreclosed on. So the odds that you actually will see a 30-year mortgage go 30 years are very, very long, and that's why the rate doesn't move with the 30-year bond. It moves with the 10. Because that's the true, you know, that's the true tenor on those instruments.
Well, I know we had a client, and a guy, she'll go nameless, but he also was on the board of the CBOE, and he was on the board of one of these mortgage places, so he had insider stuff. He's kind of a character. Anyway, he owned a boatload of stock in one of these mortgage places, mortgage insurance places.
Now, right.
You're right. Most of these people lost their money on the stock in those places. But they didn't. But I also don't know a soul who's foreclosed out of a house. Matter of fact, you know, my girlfriend has done a bunch of foreclosures, and some of the attorneys I know have done them. I don't know of anybody in that mess that ever got a check, or the bank ever got a check from. So okay, these guys went belly up. They had some money, so they paid somebody. Who the hell decided who they paid and who they didn't pay? It's clearly somebody got the check, but I don't know of any. I don't know. Do you know of anybody? I mean, I'll ask you. They bought a place for $250, which was the number here. The place went down to $170. They sort of bailed. It foreclosed. Where the bank got the check for, say, they put 10% down, which is $25 instead of $50. That the bank got the check for the mortgage insurance company for the $25. I don't know. I don't know one of those checks going out. Yet they must have gone somewhere because those places are all broke. Whatever reserves they did have are gone. Who decides who got what?
Well, it'd be nice if there was a clean way to do this. Part of the problem with this whole mess is that, and it's still going on, by the way, is that the fraud within the title system and within the way these securities were put together is unbelievable. I have a just very recent example of this. My late mother's estate, which I just closed on disposing of the house, she wanted to take a reverse mortgage, and there was an article that was out in the paper a few weeks ago about the reverse mortgage insurance funds being very severely depleted, because those you have to take what amounts to PMI, but it's not called that, it's called MIP, and the government underwrites it. And so what they did in her case was that I had a late aunt that died in 2000, was never released off the title. They found a Yahoo in Dearborn, a lawyer, to file a quitclaim with no documentation of any sort to release my aunt's interest so they could write the HECM. All right, well, of course, then my mother passes. I go to try to sell the property, and I start running the title chain down. I'm like, hey, wait, where the devil did this come from?
Right? Yeah, that's unreal.
So fortunately, I was able to run down her heirs and get an estate open for her so that I could do this, because otherwise I can't sign on behalf of someone who's been dead for 18 years without legal authority from somewhere. Well, guess what? They couldn't do it originally when the loan was originated in 2013 either, but they did.
Wait a minute, Carl's an attorney. He didn't give any authority.
The recorder at the deeds office doesn't care as long as you got 20 bucks in your hand. You file anything you want. Whether or not there's anything to it is another thing entirely. But, you know, the problem with this is nobody's going to go to jail for this stuff, just like nobody went to jail last time.
Well, that's
the reason it's still going on.
Well, I hope that the listeners, when I'm talking about this, it's not just a historical fixation I have. The reason why I keep talking about it is it's still going on. If you went in if you went in today to get a mortgage, somebody's going to be beating you about the head and shoulders, wanting you to buy mortgage insurance. When in fact, the last time you bought it, it didn't do any good.
Well, yeah, and you're paying for it, but you're not getting any value. Yeah. And then here's the other cute part of this. So then, you know, within days after my mother dies, of course, you know, everybody watches the dead file, right? So they knew that she was gone, and they immediately sent an appraiser out, which is part of what they have to do. And this appraiser turns around and writes an appraisal, I have a copy of it, that is an easy 20% above any comparable property in that market. Easily. Okay? Now, this justifies, of course, you know, that everybody's doing things the way it's supposed to. There is not a person on the planet that would have given you anything close to that so-called appraised value. And now I have an actual value because the house has been sold, and that happens by putting it on the market, yeah. And you get the bids you get, and you know, and you sell it, right? I mean, that's the true value of anything is what someone will pay you. Well, now we know what the truth is. The truth is exactly what the market analysis that I did and realtors did, said, which is that this guy was totally full of you-know-what.
See, now, Carl, I have to mention, but Brendan is going to agree with me on this, though. In your world, the obituaries are like a feeding fest for lawyers. In our world, just a couple of Southsiders, those are the Irish personals, because you could go there and find somebody else whose husband just died and you could hook up.
Well, you know, there's the old story about the Irish politician who walked into the funeral home, he looks in the casket, and he just stands backwards, shocked. A friend grabs him and goes, "What's the matter with you?" He goes, "Well, by God, I actually knew this one."
Yeah. It's
the Irish politicians used to go to wakes every night.
Daly Sr. would go to at least two a night.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, but I mean, how do you not vote for a guy that went to your grandfather's wake, for God's
sake? That's right.
So, Carl, the numbers Friday didn't seem to match to me, so I was dying to get you on. 300,000 up, yet the unemployment rate went up. And the hourly wage didn't budge. So we didn't have to pay anymore to get these guys off the shelf. Yet there they are, and they came off the rolls, and it just seemed weird to me. Is it weird or is it just me?
No. Well, it's weird because it's January. I mean, this happens every year, and to have our wonderful blonde-haired president screaming about this number is just, it's hilariously funny, because January is the correction month for all of the population estimates that were done during the previous year. And so, you know, what happens is the BLS estimates how many people entered the workforce every month, and then in January they fix it for the best data they can get from the ACS. It comes back from the census and the community survey. And so what ended up happening here is that you had the population estimate, the working age population, went from 258,888 in December, okay, to 258,239. And you say, well, excuse me, where'd the 650,000 people go? and the answer is they were fictitious. They never existed. Which is, you know, 50 grand a month, roughly, right? I mean,
that's employed?
Not a small number.
These are employed or just in the workforce?
No, this is in workforce, but right. In the employed number, it's even worse. The unadjusted number for employed went from 156,481 in December to 154,964, which is a loss of 1.5 million. Okay, now, the thing is, you got to be a little careful there, because Monday is essentially always a firing month. Okay, so what happens in January is all the people that were seasonal help for December, for this holiday called Christmas that happens every year, they all get let go. And that shows up in the numbers. It's every year. The drop this year was not on a line with where it normally is in January. It was fairly normal. Last year it was -1.27 million. This year is -1.517, but the magnitude of the miss in the guess of people in the workforce, both years was about 650,000 on the positive side. So what that does is it inflates the numbers all the way through the year, and then they come back and say, "Oh, we really didn't mean it."
Well, if not one person got hired or fired in January, what would the adjustment say the number is, quarter mil? Was it that high, 200,000?
Well, I mean, see, this is the problem is these the establishment survey, which is where you get that official number from, is full of seasonality, and you know they're black box seasonal adjustments. You really can't tease out an actual number from that. It's you just can't. So
where do you get the?
You have to use the unadjusted household.
When and where do you get? excuse me, the adjustment of small businesses that they do once a year. Trying to estimate how many are opening up or closing.
Well, that's one of the that's that birth death thing that goes into every month's guess. Okay, and establishment numbers. The reason I don't use those is I just don't believe them. Anybody that is consistently off by 600,000 working age people over the course of 12 months and doesn't fix their methodology, you got to question everything else they do.
Well, what what we're talking about here is that if you know, I'll just lob this out there, my feeling, and you can tell me where I'm wrong, which I usually am. I'm going to say that if the economy is actually growing, which I question whether this one is, if it is actually growing, in my experience, it's growing faster than you think it is, because more and more people, if you start to build some houses, you're going to get the electrician, you're going to get the plumber, and probably these guys are 1099 people, and they're not W-2 people, so you're not really going to know officially whether they were working or not until the end of the year till they send their cash in, unless they have to do... The year before they did okay, they had to send estimates in. Same way, if the economy's going to hell, all these people are getting fired and you never even know about it until one day you figure out you're not getting anywhere near as many taxes. And somebody's job is to sort of keep track of this, and once in a while they make this adjustment, right, Carol? But am I right that when things are going good, they're actually probably going better than you think? When they're going lousy, they're probably going worse than you think?
Yeah, the data is by its nature in the establishment survey and with the guests is corrected annually. By its nature, it's behind by up to a year. So, I mean, it's just the way the system works and how they report this. But I never pay any attention to the January figures as being factual. You know, I mean, you look at what happened, you know, the unemployment rate, the official rate, actually went up a tick. Okay,
right.
So yeah. It went up to 4.0. And you say, well, you know, how is that possible? And the reason it's possible is the employment population ratio came down four ticks from 60.4 to 60.0. And that's why the rate went up.
Well,
but this is again, very common in January for these distortions to be there.
Okay, well, sometimes I think, well, for me, in order for me to really understand how this works, I got to go down to the lesser, shall we say. Now, if... say, for instance, PTI Securities. If all of a sudden business gets better, and I go, business is actually pretty good right now, but if it got even better, and I hired five people, and I put them on the payroll, and I went to whoever the hell does our payroll, it's the same guys that put the thing out on Wednesday. Who's that? They do our payroll stuff. It's the name of the firm.
You do ADP?
ADP. So if I go to ADP and I put 10 guys, 10 women on the payroll, it seems to me, Carl, that there's sort of no doubt that those guys are going to get counted somewhere this month, next month. Now, if I say, God, we got all this business, but who the hell knows if it's going to last? And I hire five people and I say, you know, why don't we just do this on a consulting basis for 6 months and see if we still have all this business or if it comes and it goes. And I put them on 1099 stuff and they're all getting their own hospitalization. They get all this old stuff. How and when do they get counted? Or, because we're not going to say they're employed here. The
right.
Household survey will say, yes, their fanny's off the sofa and they're going someplace, so they're employed. So it should be in the household. It's not going to be an establishment. When does the government actually know that these guys are working? Because they don't have to send them a...
Well, it shows up in the household survey immediately.
Okay.
Because that's a survey of actual people. But the establishment survey, that would be in that birth-death guess. Okay, so that is supposedly, anyway, captured by the, well, you know, how many small businesses, because, you know, a person that's doing 1099 consulting is a quote-unquote small business, right? They pay taxes
right.
On 1040 at the end of the year. but it doesn't get officially recaptured in terms of, you know, how you net this all out until tax time comes around, and, you know, either they pay taxes or, you know, maybe if they're illegal immigrants, maybe they don't because they're being paid under the table.
I didn't say we were paying them cash. I'm saying we're paying them a check.
Well, I know. Yeah, no, you're doing it legitimately. I'm just saying that in terms of the official numbers, reconciling that isn't going to show up until, you know, the tax returns come in April.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So it does work that way, that you don't really know that they were working until the end of the year. Now, if they had a year last year where they worked all year, they're paying quarterly
estimates.
Now, I doubt very seriously if the government backs those estimates into whether somebody's working or not. Maybe they do.
They should be, but again, exactly how the internals of the BLS's little black box game with the birth death model, it's a black box. They do not have the inputs that they use in that, and how they're calculated, put out there in the public in a way that I can sit there and I can go back and, you know, check their methodology and make sure they're not gaming it.
Okay, I guess when we have any kind of a problem, I mean, what's going to be the Fed clearly now is back in that is, why worry about the balance sheet? Nobody wants me to. All I do is basically get crap if I do. Market goes down. All I do is turn the TV on, and my name is being bandied about where I'm getting canned this afternoon. And, oh, by the way, I got a president that says I'm the worst person ever and why he hired me. I mean, why not just get involved in this? I'll go out and say what they want. The market's going to go up, and, oh, by the way, I'm not accusing Powell of this. He's probably pretty straight. Why don't we just front run this like everybody else? This is in the words of the guy the frat house thing where Flounder goes, this
Animal
is
House.
Great.
Animal House.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, what's wrong with this? I buy my spooze at 9. I go out and tell people I'm going to do whatever the market wants. The spooze are up 50. I make money. Everybody likes me. I don't hear myself vilified on TV. I mean, did we get to him or what? Why wouldn't we have? Why wouldn't you do that if you're him? You know, I mean, I'm not accusing him of anything, but clearly the opposite, going against the grain. You know, if you're going up river, a lot of salmon are crashing into you, leaving marks.
Well, I think that's part of the problem, is that you don't really know, and the biggest issue right now is that when you look at what happened with the Fed balance sheet during the crash years, okay? Essentially what occurred is the losses that were in the system due to all of the outrageously ridiculous, some of it stupid, some of it criminal behavior, probably more of it stupid than criminal, but, you know, there was some of both. All of that got inflated into existence. In other words, the Federal Reserve turned around, put that stuff on their balance sheet, and then just issued the money into the system. And now they don't want to take it back out.
Right.
Because if you do, then, you know, the good effect that you got from doing this goes away. The problem is that inflation occurred, and it went into different places. And one of the places it went is the stock market and stock prices. Another place it went is into healthcare. And it's part of the reason we have this mess, because you've got this unsupportable system there. And the bad side of that is that reflects back into the federal budget and state budgets on a forward basis, because those pension obligations and Medicare and Medicaid expenses are real. So if you don't solve this problem with what's been going on in this area, and you don't take the hit in asset prices, what's going to end up happening is that you're going to be running, sometime in the next 3 or 4 years, you're going to be running $2 trillion a year deficits, and we'll see whether or not the market will put up with that.
One quick question for you, and Brendan, I'd like you to opine on this as well. How is it that when we had the inflation thing of the 60s, 70s, where little Milton Friedman was running around Washington telling the Fed that they were the ones to blame, it's obvious to anybody that's read any of these books and knows anything about monetary theory that when inflation starts, it is never across the board. It starts in an area. And the first place you want to, the reaction from people in power is to say it's a one-off, when it never is. I mean, during the 70s, the one-off was, it was because of the Arab embargo, right? It started in oil. Then you work your way through, well, the reason why food is up is because you got to deliver it, and it takes gas to deliver it, so it's all... You work this oil through the system, and you're absolutely convinced that... And what was actually happening is that was the... That was like, it was like getting a staph infection, right? It goes to the part of your body that's the weakest, right? I mean, the inflation goes there. So it started there, and then all of a sudden it spilled over and everything else. But for years, the Fed would say, let's take out food and energy, let's take out this. So finally one day they said, by the way, we got inflation. Now, what you're talking about, Carl, is monetary theory all over it again. Even though you didn't essentially expound on that, this time it's virtually all going into asset prices and in the medical community. And the fact that the price of Nehru jackets, has not gone up, it's because people don't have any money left after they're paying for their hospitalization or for their medical bills. So the actual demand on other stuff could actually be considered down because how much the medical side is stealing from people. Now, that is inflation nonetheless. And now we have people that have PhDs all over the place. And what they do is they take the 20% spent on medical, drop it to 5% in their numbers and say there's no inflation. But how is it you and I look at this and going, it's the exact same thing? If you ignore it again, you're going to go through the same problem you did in the 70s. Yet, you know what, Carl? Two people feel that way. It's you and me.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? And the thing that really is galling about this is that for years, these guys were counting in the CPI index, they were counting health insurance as 0.6%.
Yeah.
All right. Now they're being slightly more realistic. I think the last time I looked at the table, it was 1.2.
Well, yeah, what's prescription drugs? It's probably 2%. For some people, it's half.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, you know, this is supposedly the average urban consumer, okay? I mean, that's the, you know, that's how they sell it anyway, right?
Right.
But the idea that this isn't, you know, when you take it, you'd look at the same thing that happened with owner's equivalent rent, okay, with housing. They don't measure house prices because if they did, then they would have to, the inflation problem during the 03, 04, 05, 06 area would have been instantly obvious, right? House prices are skyrocketing. The inflation numbers would have been off the charts. Instead, the perversity of what they did by computing this as owner's equivalent rent is that as interest rates go down and the cap rate goes down, all right, your owner's equivalent rent actually decreases even though the price of your house went up.
Well, what it also does, Carl, is we gotta let you go for this, but I loved it, buddy, is when you keep messing with the rent number or the ownership number of the house, let's put it this way, is that you don't count property taxes.
Right.
If your property taxes go up, which means it's an inflationary hit to you of some kind, and your home price goes down, they're actually saying that the inflation is going down, and in fact, it's going up. Because you're paying for it every month, and they don't count that.
Right.
So, I mean, have you ever seen or even read or heard of a bigger spread between the CPI and the actual cost of living? The spread there is dramatic.
Oh, yeah. It's ridiculous, but that's because they just keep defining out all of the things that hose you from the CPI.
Why have they been so good at getting away with it?
Because the people let them, and the reality of it is this. This is how our policy is set. So if you want to actually stop the stupid, you have to stop the intentional bogus reporting.
Here's one for both of you guys, because you're not kids. I don't know if you're as old as I am, but you're not kids. Is all the stuff going on in Washington nothing more than a skirmish to keep the idiot people who live in this country, me included, amused while all this stealing is going on behind the scenes?
Oh, absolutely.
There's a lot of distraction. The whole purpose of this is distraction on both parties.
Well, that's what I'm asking. And then does that mean you guys are just conspiracy theorists, or you're that's true? I think it is true.
No, I think it's true.
I think it's absolutely true. I mean, you just look at the data; it's right there in your face.
Well, that's kind of scary. All right. Mm-hmm. Carl, thank you very much, buddy. We'll have you back on because we had other things to talk about. I'm going to dig further into the how everybody seems to have lost money on this stuff, not just the one place. So on the mortgages. All right. Thank you very much, bud. SP Futures still up 5. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right now, right now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. Mr. Brendan Cornan. We'll have Mr. John Neal in a second. We have Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures up 5. They've been stuck there since we got here. The Dow up 94. Kind of stuck there too. NASDAQ down 23. So we opened up and we have been... like I say, we have not moved very much. We got rallies pretty much everywhere. DAX up 117, that's 1%. It was up a little more earlier, but still up pretty good. FTSE up 86, 1.2%. CAC around up 51, it's almost exactly 1%. We're in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 39, the Hang Seng up 59, so not much going on over there, kind of a mixed bag. Oil, we've got down 66 cents now, so we've been leaking the last couple days in the oil leaking. How's that for a... it's 1.2%. Brent down 59 cents, 0.9. So we're talking about a spread of almost exactly $8. Natural gas, 2.69. So up 4 cents. So maybe we think we're going to be a little bit of a cold wave coming yet. But I got to believe that you had your one chance to rally natural gas when it got to 4.50, and hopefully you sold there. RBOB 141. I got my gas. I think I paid $2.11 on Sunday morning, Matty. Eat your heart out, you city kind of guy. Home heating oil is $1.89. Gold down a little bit. It's down 60 cents only. It was down more. Silver down 3 cents. Maybe it'll make a bounce back today. And again, we've got the 10-year yield is 2.72, which is nowhere near 3%, but it's up from the 2.65 a week or so ago. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports, Manny?
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. One crash on the area expressways. It's on the south side, I-57 northbound at Halstead.
There is a crash that's causing delays right near where a bunch of shootings were yesterday, which is not great. Obviously, a little bit north of that, but still, I-57 was a disaster yesterday.
See, that one was 21 below zero. We didn't have any shootings.
Yes, two shootings in the same day on a Chicago expressway yesterday. Now we have a crash. That's it. Just a regular old crash, northbound at Halstead on I-57.
They're still sweeping the shoulders for brass.
That's true. Bishop Ford and the Dan Ryan are looking okay. Traffic building heavily on the Stevenson and Eisenhower, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Same with the Kennedy. Off the expressways, it looks like we have road down to one lane due to a water main break. 2E Avenue on the north side, eastbound between Lincoln and Costner, is down to one lane. Crews have the one lane open during the morning rush and will begin to repair the water main break after the morning rush. So they will close it down completely after the rush. Right now, though, you can still get through. It's just slowing way down, so avoid 2E if you can. North of there, North Shore, St. Mary's Road at Old School Road, there's an accident. And there's a crash Route 54 at Peterson. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds. Could have some flurries or rain mix, but nothing significant. A high of 32. Right now it's cloudy and 29 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today. A high of 63. Right now it's mostly clear and 52. In sports, the Bulls were off last night. Suns lost to the Rockets 118-110. Blackhawks were off as well. Coyotes lost to the Stars 5-4. Northwestern Wildcats lost at home in college hoops to Penn State 59-52.
So, say for instance, I was running for mayor, and that would make 112 people running for mayor. Hey, Jan, how are you?
Doing good. Good morning. How you doing, guys?
All right, and I came out and I said, here's my proposal for shootings on the ramp and other expressways. I'm going to go get two either old Jeeps or Toyota Land Cruisers or something. I'm going to put a 50 caliber on the top. And anytime there's a call that says somebody's shooting out of a car, we're just going to go at it, and we're going to riddle the thing with bullets and just leave it sitting on the side of the road. Come get your bodies.
That's like the old TV show, The Rat Patrol, when
exactly.
They go across the desert shooting up all the cars.
I got to believe that I get a lot of votes because I don't. You know, at some point, everybody knows I'm not a law and order guy. My grandmother used to say the age of reason is 7. You're supposed to know right from wrong, and if you get to the point where you don't realize that shooting out of a car, you don't know who you're going to hit. I don't know if there's any coming back for you. And the world would probably just be better off without you. I just, at some point, I know it's horrible to say, but if you can't figure that out, I don't know what class I can send you to. I don't know what jail I can put you in that's gonna change your mind about doing something like that. Or am I just getting old and grumpy?
From my perspective, there's a lot to that. I mean, it's obvious of what you said and a lot of environmental things come into these. You could have show upon show about this, to be honest with you, Tom.
Well, here's my concern. You could have you could say, given the horrible upbringing he had, I'm talking about Mr. Nazi Adolf Hitler, the horrible upbringing he had. He didn't do so hot in the war. They didn't like him so much. He was basically on the streets in Vienna and doorways for a long time. Everything that could possibly fall bad for somebody felt bad for the guy. Yet at some point, when somebody gets to do some stuff that's so, you know, so horrible, you got to stop them and talk about the upbringing afterward. I mean, at some point, you almost don't care about that. If somebody made it to this point and they're 30 years old and they're winging lead out of a car on a busy expressway, you know what? I'll talk about his upbringing and how he should have had a better school and everything else later. I just not now. I just got to stop him.
Right. And that's exactly it. Irregardless of all those circumstances, comes a point in time where enough's enough, and here's where it ends, whatever that means. You know,
well, the other
your scenario, or maybe incarceration, or whatever.
Well, at some point, the other people on the expressways have rights too, and one of those rights
exactly.
is that I get shot. Right? I just
well, not just the expressways, but you know, some of our communities, and especially you guys know that in Chicago, are you know being held hostage, by a lot of this violence. So, that's another big part of it.
Is any Is that any of this stuff happening in Phoenix or no? I mean, I'm sorry.
Of course.
But I mean, do you have every morning talk about somebody firing lead on the expressway?
Well, not every morning, but we do have road rage. We do have gang violence. To a great degree here too. But yeah, we do have road rage. I don't know that it's every day, but
I'm starting to get some of that. And virtually, I don't know, Maddie, if you're the same way, you don't drive as much in the city, but one of these days you might read Chief Takes Out Uber Driver. Because those guys are unconscionable. I mean, it's...
I agree with you on that. There really should be more restrictions on what Uber and Lyft drivers can do.
I mean, if one more guy, if I'm in the right lane, turns right in front of me from the left lane, I think I'm going to pull out some hair or something at the very least. Mine. I'll start with mine.
My big thing, forget about the people with the lead. My big thing is I don't know how many times, you know, in any given week I almost get hit by somebody either texting or fiddling with their cell phone in some way or another. Hugely dangerous there.
We have, I don't care if they're listening or not. In the Chicago area, because of a lot of the stuff that the police have gone through, I'm going to say there's a complete abdication of any kind of traffic stuff. I don't know what they're doing. They claim to have more police than they ever have. I never seen one. Never seen one. I don't know where the hell they're hiding, but you can see the most crazy things going down in traffic. When's the last time you saw somebody get a traffic ticket? Anyway.
It's been a while. I can't remember the last, now that you mentioned that, I don't remember anybody getting pulled over for
Thomas on Friday.
Yeah, well. But I mean, talking about just going through a red light and stuff.
Not that often. I would say it.
Well, red lights are taken care of by the cameras.
Yeah, the cops don't even look at red lights.
Well, but there's.
I've got a red light ticket in the last 3 months.
But a lot of those have come out, and not very many lights have them. Stop signs don't have them. I mean, you see, we put up with the morning, man. People just, okay. But I mean, you know, crazy stuff. But anyway, let's shift gears a little bit, John. We know that that's a problem, but I think it affects the economy. I mean, what is today's shootings? If Maddie's talking to somebody, what if somebody's listening to Stocks and Jacks, and they're in Tulsa and they just got a job offer in Chicago, and they hear Maddie talking about closing an expressway because people were gunning each other down an expressway the night before? I mean, if you're that person, and you say, "Wow, I got 3 or 4 teenage kids of driving age. Why the hell do I want to move there?" I mean, how does it not affect you?
Yeah, that part is true. I think you're right about that, Tom. But the other thing is, like, I look at it as if it was myself. It's okay, you know. Chicago is a very large city, like New York, like L.A., like Dallas. Going to have good and bad parts, and I don't know. Maybe I just think a little rational there.
Well, that's the story among. You know, people moving in from Google. I'm moving to the near west side. Look at all these great bars. Nobody comes here, and there's no violence here. I don't know that you can constantly say it's never going to be on my block. I mean, Maddie, we've had stuff happen in our neighborhood. Can there be a higher priced neighborhood in the city?
Well, you could never be anywhere that's totally safe. That's the point, unless you're in some kind of a bulletproof bubble. You still, at some point, you have to live your life and, obviously, you're not going to, move in whatever the, worst section is of Chicago, whatever that is, but, you do your best yourself to live your life.
So what do you think if I get a new truck one of these days, should I go get it Kevlar put in the doors and bulletproof glass?
Well, you can, but it's probably still not going to totally solve the wrong place, wrong time kind of scenario.
Well, actually, my truck is a former Secret Service, but I don't think it has the full bulletproof thing. It must have been Southern truck. It must have been guarding Jimmy Carter. Anyway, Jan, we've had this really nice run back on some of the new accounts I've been getting. That's terrific because guys are making back an awful lot of the money they were down. Now what? Are people going to take a look at their portfolio a little differently this time and say maybe I should protect a little bit of it, or yet another quarter went down, and then the cool guys hung in there, and the dopo sold?
Well, that's kind of what the media is saying. I mean, you're hearing a lot from some of the talking heads. but, you know, hopefully that's a lesson. I'll be getting a lot more people call me, both existing and, you know, newer folks, newer clients, and, you know, asking about, you know, protecting, you know, certain things and doing things a little bit differently. So hopefully that was a good lesson, Tom.
Well, I would think, yeah, because some of these, you've seen even some of the FANG stacks going back up. And, you know, to be honest with you, I look at this Facebook, and you know, Maddie knows more about this than me, but at the end of the day, even though, you know, they're in a hot seat in Europe, they're in a hot seat here, and we've dragged people in front of the Congress, what's actually happened? Is the thing changed at all, Maddie, or is it still same old stuff? People giving them stuff the guys are selling. I mean, and they claim they're not, but obviously they're making money someplace.
They've changed a lot with of their terms of use and that whole thing.
Like how?
I mean, they just updated it completely. They made everyone accept the new terms, and they from a legal perspective, they put a lot of effort into that. But I don't know if it's in, if anything's changed. I mean, so they're still getting all the data that they want from you.
So you essentially are agreeing to it now?
Yeah, I think they're taking, you know, many more steps to make sure that you are agreeing to everything.
But they haven't stopped it. They just want you to agree to it.
Well, I think the things they've stopped. I know they stopped targeted advertising based on race. And that was a big thing. Now they will not do that. There's different things that they stopped, but yeah, it's mostly just getting you to agree to it so that they're not liable.
I had a back in college. I know somebody left one in his room. We had a Anheuser-Busch, it was a Budweiser sign with a African American couple drinking beer. You know, which is fine. I don't care what anybody. It was a nice sign. Guess what it said on the back. Anheuser-Busch ethnic bar sign. The thing had to be from, you know, I bet the thing was made in the early 50s. You know, and it would, actually it was a really nice sign, nice looking couple, nice bar. I mean, you know, there's nothing I wouldn't put on the wall in the back. Ethnic bar sign. I'm sitting there, God, that's kind of the wording. Why couldn't you just say
Anheuser-Busch? Probably collector's item today, too.
Oh, yeah, why not just say Anheuser-Busch bar sign, you know? But, I don't know, but the different world. But, I think it's time for people to get another chance here to take a look at some of their stuff. What do you make of, Apple? It's done nothing but go up now. It was down to did it go under 150? I think it did, Jen. And now it's pushing 172, probably go up again today.
Right.
Are they in trouble? Are they not? Are the Chinese people buying these things? Are they not? It's almost like, you know, all the bad news is out and they're going to go straight up again. There's always less companies, I guess, so they're going to get more and more. But I don't know. Are they back in the swing of it? Because at the end of the day, people are going to want to buy another Apple.
I don't know if they're back in the swing of it. I'd be a little hesitant. I have some people that have it. They've had it for some time. We've, you know, been able to successfully, especially sell calls in a time or two. You know, buy some puts around it. You know, it's a position they want to keep, and it really, really. Keep lowering their cost basis and things like that. But as far as generating a new position, boy, I got to tell you, yeah, I think there's better things out there right now that, you know, that's not high on my list, to be honest with you, Tom. It's, I don't know what their next, you know, everybody's looking for the next best thing out of them. And, you know, granted, the Cadillac, if you will, of the phones, I don't personally own one. I don't get it, but it is what it is. And, I think a little bit of the luster's wearing off of this thing.
Well, they our man Russell will be on tomorrow. I think didn't he say Maddie that the his daughter in high school or something? The high school requires an Apple tablet or.
I know that there are some schools that do that. In fact, CPS doesn't, but there are some school districts around the state of Illinois. That do require Apple products. They buy in bulk from Apple.
Yeah, he's in a private school district, and I remember he did say they required a tablet. I don't remember if it was brand specific or not.
I know my mother's cousin, who, I don't know, he's an older guy, but he's an engineer. He's always going to be an engineer, right? Aerospace guy. And his granddaughter went to Ohio State, and they somewhat demanded a laptop with certain specs. And he said that the Microsoft tablet, the one that you can sort of take apart and everything. You guys ever seen one of those? They're pretty neat. You can stand the screen up, like a separate screen if you want, and all those kinds of things, and make it a two piece or a one piece. But they were expensive. But they're Windows based. He said that thing had like twice the capability of any of the stuff that Ohio State wanted, so he just bought her one of those. They're like 600, they're not cheap, they're like $650. But he said this thing was like working with a desktop.
Right.
You know, and that was Windows based, but so if you walk in with one of those and everybody else is using Apple, what can't you do, I guess? I don't know anything about it. Is it, there's not much going back and forth between the two, is there?
No, that's the problem. I mean, you can pretty much accomplish everything with both. It's just they don't talk to each other very well. So if your teacher is teaching a class in one format, there could be, you know, different little formatting things you could run into. But other than that, I don't see any big deal between using different brands.
Well, if you're gonna get an Apple laptop, you're probably end up with an Apple phone or anything else, right? I mean, they're kind of all linked
together.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and they all talk to each other, and you're going to use iTunes, and you're going to do everything Apple. And your chargers are all Apple.
Now, the other stuff's not really the same, but like if you get any other laptop, does that talk to your other phone or sort of the same way or not as good? Apple seems more communicative from what I understand among their stuff.
Yeah, I don't really know what you're asking.
I'm saying, is it easier if I have a Samsung phone and I have somebody else's laptop and somebody else's something else tablet that aren't the other brands? Are they going to be as communicative among each other as the three Apple things?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't really answer that either.
Because actually, we're trading these stocks. Obviously, what do you have a favorite stock, Jen? I was listening to. You know, Jan and Pete were all over. They love this eBay. Things went up every day. I wonder when those guys are going to be kind of heard of again, because anything you can get on Amazon, you can get there, seems to me. They don't advertise near as well. They never come up anywhere. And everything else you look for, right, it's going to come up. I mean, is Amazon, you know, just get that? Do they demand those spots on Google and stuff, or do they pay for it, or both?
Well, I imagine it's a combination of things. I mean, obviously the difference between the two. I mean, both of them you can straight out buy, but eBay is, you know, also kind of an auction site, things like that. And I know talking to people that are, what do you want to call, distributors on both of them, Amazon, I don't think, you know, charges your listings, whereas eBay charges you from the get-go. It's been some time since I talked to somebody that's done that. So.
Well, it seems like I go to eBay once in a while for, I always look for trucks on there and so forth. I'm going to say that most of the stuff I see now, it's not really an auction. I mean, there's a buy it now price, and there is essentially an auction, but I watch these things and they get to 80% of the price and they'll just say reserve not met and they start it all over again. Most of the stuff is not really an auction. I don't think.
Right.
Or it's certainly not a whatever the number is auction, whether it's $5 or $20 or $500. There's these big minimums on everything to where why don't you just list the price?
Right. For me, it's been a very, very good source of me collecting the vinyl records.
I can imagine.
eBay. And Amazon, too. So.
See, now, if you were one of the... I wish I would have bought the... My long story, I won't go into it, but my nephew and I and my niece... We did the storage wars before the show was on, Brendan. And they have these auctions for people that have, and I was trying to get them a summer job, and I was going to let them use my truck and show them how to run a business and actually keep books and all that kind of stuff. And, well, we were able to buy some stuff, but they weren't very good at selling. And when my garage got too full, I said, we're out of this business.
Right.
Plus, you end up buying things from people that you know, like, are in jail or something, and you feel awful about it. Because somebody obviously came into some bad times, but the one of them, Jan, was like 700 albums was in this place. That was it, and it went for like $100 maybe.
Okay.
But to sell an album on eBay, I guess they're big demand for them in China. Basically, if you get $50 an album, if you've got to listen to it, you've got to grade it, because if there's a scratch, you better put it down. And you have to clean it all up, and you got to put the pictures nice on eBay. I'll bet it's a solid hour, 45-50 minutes to put everyone on. So if you had 500, you're really making, if you know what you're doing, you're probably actually making $30 an hour. It's not like it's that you could buy those things for, you know, $200 and go into an album store and have them turn around and give you $2,000. I mean, you could, there's work in this. I mean, and it's amazingly how economically it comes down to pretty, I mean, if you figure your time is worth $30 an hour, virtually everything you see in there is priced interesting. Now, obviously, if a guy's got a big, you know, craftsman, tool thing that you didn't see and you open up the drawer and there's a pile of cash, I mean, obviously that's different, but it doesn't. Actually, we bought two of them. You end up with some cash. There's always something with some money in the pocket.
That's right.
Weird. Anywho, too much on the storage worth. So, John, are we buying or selling today? I think I want to be neutral by the end of the day. I don't want to be all that long going into this speech.
No, neutral. I've got a few things. I'm looking at these futures here that where I'll be able to jockey some of these options around, you know, that I need to move, and it looks like a few things are going to go my way today. So
I've had a roll Apple every day for the last week. Are I going to keep rolling it today or what? I started with the 60.
Oh, have you? Yeah, I've got an issue. Well, it looks like it's up now, but I've got an issue with Lite. I don't know if you've ever played with that one, LITE.
No,
nothing, but it's down a little today.
Well, Apple, we sold this 160s last week, and I think I'm up to the 175s 3 days later.
Yeah. Right. No, it's that kind of stock.
SP futures up 550, Dow futures up exactly 100, exactly 100. NASDAQ futures up 21. Thank you, John. Thank you, Brennan. Thank you, Matty. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.